Okay, this hour we'll take your phone calls with Elizabeth Greenwood as we talk about our work playing dead, questions for her, or perhaps you planned your own death or you thought about it. Share that story. Nobody's going to question your motives at all. So we'll be back with your calls in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast, Elizabeth Greenwood with us. So Elizabeth, faced with talking to people who've tried to face, you know, fake their own deaths and things, do you understand their motives or do you walk away going, how did they even think about this?
I do. I try to be very compassionate, and, like, put myself in their shoes.
Sure.
And where their minds were at the time that they faked their deaths. Because usually when we hear about these cases, we're only reading these quick kind of newswire stories of like, oh, this idiot faked his own drowning and got caught just a few days later. You know, there's usually much, much more to the story. So if I can kind of squint and put myself in their shoes, their plans usually do kind of possess their own internal logic. So it becomes a bit harder sometimes when, you know, I have the opportunity to interview children, family members, and loved ones of someone who had faked their deaths, where they, you know, either colluded with the family member to fake his or her own death, or they were under the impression that their family member was dead. And, you know, lo and behold, they were not. So hearing from that kind of side of the story made it much more complicated. You know, this was really very affecting for a lot of people and, you know, felt like a really grave betrayal. So I think it's very complex and it really is important to look at this phenomenon from a lot of different angles and perspectives.
And you've got some recommendations because one of the things you say is if you're going to play dead, don't stage a drowning.
Yeah, that's right. As we mentioned before, it's because usually bodies do turn up. So if, for example, you know, you go out for a swim one day and oops, you are also in a ton of debt and you don't show up, it just doesn't look believable. You know, investigators will look for that body. So drowning, even though we think it's really good, usually is like a big red flag.
Yet you say hiking is a great way to disappear.
Yeah, hiking is just a bit more open-ended. It's unclear what happened to you. And unfortunately, lots of people do, in fact, disappear while hiking every year, and their bodies aren't found. So that can just be a little bit more believable. Again, not recommending any of these things, just, you know, some tips and tricks I picked up over the years.
Well, and in hiking, there are a lot of sickos out there hiding, grabbing people. So
that's right.
That's believable.
That's right. That's right. Unfortunately, it's true.
You do recommend that people wear disguises.
Yeah, so that's a tip that I got from John Darwin, the man I mentioned before, the English guy who colluded with his wife and staged the kayaking accident. He was able, what he told me, is that he was able to kind of hide in plain sight in his own community, in his own town for so long because he had this elaborate disguise. And if you look up pictures of him online from this time, it is pretty incredible. Like, you would never kind of recognize him in a side-by-side. He wore a hat and dark glasses, and he even changed the way he walked and carried himself. And I think he took on kind of a gruffer kind of accent. And again, you know, this is someone who would walk down the street in his town and pass people he knew, pass his old friends. He once passed his own father walking down the street one day when he was supposed to be dead. And, you know, he attributed a lot of that to the elaborate nature of his disguise.
It's amazing what they will do and how far they will go to do this, isn't it?
It really is. It really is. Pretty incredible.
Do women do this too?
So it's a good question. Many of the cases I found where people get caught, again, the people in my book are people who faked their deaths and got caught, they are almost all men, like 99% male people who do this. And if you think about it, you know, when I mentioned the kind of character profile of an American who does it, it's usually a white-collar criminal, and those guys usually happen to be men. Frank Ahern, who helps people disappear, he told me that when women would approach him for his disappearing services. It was almost always because they were in a domestic violence situation where they were being beaten and they had to get out. They were literally fighting for their lives. And that's why they would ask him to disappear. He never charged those clients. He always helped them pro bono. So what I think is that either women don't do it as much, or they do it just as much, and they just do it better. They don't get caught. And perhaps that's because, you know, the stakes are in some ways higher for them, where it really is life or death if you're trying to escape an abusive partner. So that would really just make you much more cautious, I think.
All right, let's go to the phones. Wildcard line, Steve in Wyoming. Welcome to the show, Steven. Go ahead, Steve.
Hey, George.
Hi there.
How you doing, man? It's
I'm
an honor
good.
To talk to you.
You too. You too. Go ahead.
Well, I've gone through some relatively similar. I didn't necessarily take a death, but I used to live in the lower parts of Mississippi. I did a lot of, less than reputable things. I was working for some people. A lot of the casinos down there are owned by Vietnamese. And during that time, we had some... We had some pretty serious issues.
Okay.
And one of the top guys that I was working for at that point in time ended up getting killed.
Oh, my God. And
yeah. I mean, you know.
Because of gambling and stuff?
Yeah, for the most part, you know what I mean? I wasn't necessarily on the front as far as their whole, you know, money laundering schemes, drugs, things like that.
Right. Right. But did you want to disappear or what happened?
Yeah, basically what I did was disappear. And that's why I came up here. I mean, I'm not afraid to say I live in Wyoming. I mean, good luck finding me if anybody is.
Are you who you say you are? I mean, is that your name, Steve?
Sure. And, but, you know, I think one of the undisclosed things I've heard during this conversation that I've been listening to, which generally speaking, I try to get to your show as much as I can, but there's a lot of times where I, you know, really don't have the time, things like that. I'm off doing other things. But more or less, I mean, one of the things that hasn't been spoken about is moving out and leaving to... you know, I mean, moving out to a place where there's not a lot of people, where you can go and really stay under the radar.
And, yeah, it's kind of disappear.
Part, as far as I'm concerned, I mean, I'm off the grid.
I mean, have you changed your identity, though, or are you still who you are?
I'm still who I am, but I haven't really had to use my identity, and that's kind of one of the benefits of working in these smaller towns, because I mean, to get a job around the places where I'm at, that's just a regular, you know, part-time or full-time, they're still using paper forms for applications. Like
but
that,
what do you do about like a bank account stuff? You don't have anything like that?
No, I cash my checks at Walmart.
Wow. Okay.
And you know, that's one of the things that. That's what I do. I've kept away from the banks, cashed my checks over at Walmart, and then most of the other stuff I have is in solid materials as far as, you know, some silver. I collect a lot of ammo.
Okay. Go ahead, Ellen. It sounds like you have a few questions, Elizabeth.
Oh, yeah. I just wanted to ask Steve, when you got out of that situation down south, did you just kind of walk away and disappear, or did you set up any kind of like death hoax or accident scenario to make it seem as if something tragic had happened to you?
Well, it's kind of hard if I want to comment on that and not feel.
Okay.
Yeah, we don't want to put you in an awkward situation here.
I can say this much. I was around when that big issue took place. And I got out of there, I may or may have not have been implicated. I don't necessarily even know because I skipped town pretty much that night.
Yeah, I was going to say you didn't give a 2-week notice, did you?
Yeah, there was not really calling anybody to say that I was gone. And I happened to have some close mutual friends who had moved up from Texas to Wyoming because, you know, it's kind of the same lifestyle up here. A little more Western, a little less Southern, but generally speaking, I mean, you know, people don't really try to dig into your business or anything like that.
Would they be looking for you now?
It's been about 7 years. I ain't seen much.
Well, that's good.
And from where I'm at, you know, I got my old 308 sniper rifle. And
have you...
from time to time, and I could see somebody coming off quite a ways away.
Do you have a family or loved ones or anything like that?
Yes, I do. I visit them. You know, I don't really disclose to any of my friends.
Well, I understand.
My family knows when I'm coming, but...
Have they been visited by these people?
The ones in Mississippi have, but they didn't give them much hassle because they basically had told him, you know, he disappeared.
He's gone. And we don't know where he is.
It was more or less, you know, it was one of those things where they weren't really worth anything to them without me. So that's kind of just how it went.
All right, we're going to go let you hide again, Steve. You don't want to stay on the line too long. You never know. Elizabeth, amazing, isn't it?
Amazing. Yeah, that's such a great point that Steve brings up, too, about kind of the benefits of living in a rural location. Because, yeah, there's probably more of an opportunity to kind of work off the books and operate on a cash basis. You know, one of the things that I found in my research that is a slight downside to that is one of the reasons why a lot of people end up getting caught is because of their cars. So very similar to that story I told about Benny Wendt getting pulled over for the light bulb burnt out over his license plate. If you're somewhere you have to drive, you should drive very carefully because getting pulled over for a routine traffic stop has the likelihood to kind of blow up your whole cover. You know, I'm in New York. I ride the subway. I drive maybe like twice a year. So that's kind of one benefit to being in a metropolitan area.
It's got to be difficult, Elizabeth, to kind of go to bed with one eye open all the time, isn't it?
I imagine it is. I mean, what I found, though, in talking to people who've had these experiences is that there's a part of you that really just has to compartmentalize. So especially if you have loved ones or children that you're leaving behind, you kind of just have to say, okay, that's over there. You know, I'm leaving because it's of greater benefit to my family to be out of the situation. And you just kind of shut that part off. You know, it's kind of cold and calculating, but it's what you have to do. So I think that you always are looking over your back a little bit, but I imagine, you know, with time it becomes just kind of a part of your day, a part of who you are.
Let's go to Tom in La Jolla, California. Now, I know Tom is not hiding his identity. Go ahead, Tom.
Hi, George. Thank you for taking my call. Fascinating interview.
My gosh.
I'm reminded of there used to be a small publisher called Loom Panics, and I think they've migrated online, so you can probably Google them, Loom Panics. But they had a number of books, you know, with titles like How to Disappear and Live Free.
Yes, I know what you're talking about. I love those books.
Yeah, and then, I mean, the truth is stranger than fiction. I mean, and they also had a number of books on costume disguises and facial disguises, that type of thing. It was really a one-stop shopping catalog, you know, if you wanted to disappear type of thing. And I believe they're online now. They were online like 5 years ago. You can Google Loom Panics. But what I wanted to ask you, Elizabeth, was about, you know, we talk about Elvis, we talk about Michael Jackson, but there's another figure that, and that's Jim Morrison, lead singer of The Doors. And he died 1970 in Paris. It was very convenient. You know, he had told the band members, and the band members gave interviews to, like, Rolling Stone at the time. I know Ray Manzarek and Densmore, the drummer of the band, you know, they said it would just be like Jim to fake his own death. Mm-hmm. He was always talking about faking his own death, you know, to the band. He says, I think it would be great to be a chameleon. He goes, I think it would be great to one day be Jim Morrison and then the next day cut my hair very short, show up in a three-piece suit, and live a different life. And there are a lot of mysterious things about Jim Morrison's death, such as his father was an admiral in the Navy, mm-hmm. and specifically with naval intelligence and the operational side of naval intelligence. There were rumors that Jim consulted his father. There were other strange incidents, such as 2 years after his death, in Los Angeles, the bank that held his savings and bank accounts, the tellers recalled that for 2 years after his so-called death, you know, he would show up at the bank and make deposits and make withdrawals and, you know, chat. He was very gregarious. He would talk with anybody, you know, and talk with the tellers. And then finally, he closed out his accounts. And there was also rumors that he reconnected with Ray Manzarek in the late 1990s. And Ray Manzarek didn't believe it. And then they got to talking and says, oh, my gosh, you know, this is Jim Morrison. And Ray Manzarek agreed to keep the secret.
Well, you know, Ray was on our show years ago before he died. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's what I wanted to say. You know, I listened to the Coast to Coast Ray Manzarek interview, and there are a lot of odd things about it. For example, he says that, you know, he met Jim Morrison in 1966, and Jim Morrison was 5'11", okay, 5'11", and he had hair down to the small of his back. And I got to see the Doors when they were singing in clubs in Los Angeles. I got to see the second to their last concert before Jim Morrison allegedly died. He was 5'7", barely.
Jeez.
Okay. And he didn't start growing his hair, you know, till like about 1967, 1968. And there were just a lot of strange things about his disappearance, a lot of sightings.
All right, hold on for a second. We're going to come back and get a little reaction from Elizabeth Greenwood as we talk about her book, Plain Dead. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, our final segment with Elizabeth Greenwood, author of Plain Dead. Elizabeth, are you teaching at Columbia this morning?
I'm not, no.
Good.
That's lucky.
You can take it easy and rest. I know it's tough for people on the East Coast, especially the guests, because they're not used to these hours. So we push them.
Adventure.
It is.
Up in the middle of the night.
So Jim Morrison, I think he's dead. I had Ray Manzarek on. Ray, of course, has now passed on, and he was one of the surviving Doors at the time. And I asked him specifically, I said, Ray, do you think Jim Morrison is dead or alive? He said, nah, George, he's dead. So if he was faking it, he was taking it to the grave. And I'm talking about Manzarek. Mm-hmm. But Tomet, I think he indeed he died. Jim Morrison died. But it's a great story by Tom.
It is a great story. It reminds me a lot of the story also about Andy Kaufman.
Oh, that's a great one.
Yeah, so he's also, there's been lots of death hoax rumors about Andy, and kind of similar to Jim Morrison in the sense that he was very beguiled by pseudoside. He loved Elvis. Elvis was his hero. And he said, oh, I want to fake my death like Elvis. It would be the ultimate prank to pull off. And, you know, he died under kind of mysterious circumstances, too. He was a health nut. This is widely known about him. He did yoga and meditation. He was vegetarian. And he died of lung cancer at the age of 35, which is so young to, you know, contract that kind of cancer typically. And his friend Bob Zamuda has often said that he doesn't think that Andy is actually dead. He thinks he faked his death, and that, you know, he's hopeful that he's, like, still out there. And every 10 years or so, they have these big Andy Kaufman events, and he, and Bob told me that they will place ads in papers around the world saying, Andy, if you're out there, if you're reading this, you have to come. You have to come to the event and shock everyone. So that's another fun one.
And come back in. Also, remember Eddie and the Cruisers? That was another one.
Yeah, that's right. That's a great one.
They are all over the place. Okay, back to the phone. Steve in Illinois, welcome to the show. Go ahead, Steve.
Good morning, George and Elizabeth.
Hi there.
Hi.
George, you're slacking on us. I'm surprised you didn't bring this up, that you have another guest that's on that is actually trying to do research on people that go missing in national parks.
No, that's Politis. Hold on. We're not off the air yet.
I know.
All right.
But I was wondering if you were going to get to that or not.
As a matter of fact, David's coming on in a couple weeks on hunters who have disappeared.
Right. Well, you know, it's a national park, and the government likes to help people disappear. You know, it might be hand in hand. You never know.
You never know.
That's all I got to say. I'm going to let somebody else get in. Y'all have a very Merry Christmas.
All right. Thanks. And we have a guest, Elizabeth, who writes about missing people, primarily who disappear at our park systems.
Wow.
And they're just gone. I mean, people say, you know, he was behind me by six steps. I turn around and he's gone. So really weird stuff.
Ooh, yeah.
Now, in some cases, bodies do show up. Yeah, they do show up, too. So there's something very weird happening these days as well.
Indeed.
Wow. So what's your follow-up to Plain Dead? What's your next project?
I'm working on another nonfiction book right now, tentatively titled Love Lockdown. And this is about people who seek the incarcerated, people who are in prison, as their love objects. So perhaps you're familiar with these cases, you know, where Charles Manson recently remarried a woman in her 20s named Star. And there's, you know, the kind of phenomenon of murderer groupies. So it's looking at it from that very extreme example, but also, you know, everyday people who go on these prisoner pen pal sites and end up finding love in, you know, probably the most unexpected place. So it's looking at these relationships between people who are in prison and people on the outside.
All right, Emmy in McAllen, Texas, it's your turn on Coast to Coast. Hi, Emmy.
Hello, George. Hello to you. Hello, Elizabeth.
Hi.
Hi.
The previous callers mentioning other famous people that supposedly they believe they faked their death, like the previous caller said, Jim Morrison. You guys were mentioning Elvis and Michael Jackson. There seems to be an obsession over the late Tupac Shakur, who died in September 13th in 1996. And it's funny because a year previous to his death, he changed his name to Machiavelli. Now, Niccolo Machiavelli was an Italian historian, philosopher, and war strategist. And when Tupac was in prison, when he was incarcerated, he read a lot of books, and he was inspired by this person. And in one of the interviews, he mentioned that he had read a book by Machiavelli called The Art of War, not Chung Tzu's The Art of War, but Machiavelli's Art of War. And he apparently he advocates in his book to fake your own death to fool your enemies. And apparently a lot of people believe that that is what Tupac Shakur did. Now, I don't think he did that. You know, I believe he's passed away.
Yeah, he was gunned down in Vegas, wasn't he?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And, you know, it's all over the internet. It's been so long, and even to this day, you just type on Google Tupac Shakur, and you just see alive, Tupac alive. So it's just an obsession that people have, you know, and I just wanted to get your take on that specific person.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, I think that is one of these death hoaxes that, you know, just will not die because similar to the Michael Jackson death hoax. People are very passionate about piecing together these clues and foreshadowing, like you're talking about Machiavelli's The Prince and other texts that he references in some of his albums that came out shortly before he was shot. And there are all those great rumors about Tupac being in Cuba. And, you know, now that Castro's dead, maybe he'll turn up. Maybe more people can go to Cuba now searching for him. But I think that Tupac Shakur one is just incredible, and it really does capture the imagination. I mean, you know, unlike other people we've discussed where their deaths, you know, could have had, I guess, more room to tamper with. So, for example, Andy Kaufman dying of cancer, you know, conceivably you could imagine a situation where the doctor was in on it, they kind of swapped bodies. But, you know, shooting is pretty hard to fake, unfortunately. But, you know, just a few years ago, there was an LAPD officer named David Myers who was on his deathbed, and he claimed that he was paid $1.5 million for his part in the cover-up the night Shakur was shot. So, you know, that just came out last year. So there's still lots of pieces to this puzzle that people are still contributing. So it's pretty amazing.
And Elizabeth, the people who are co-conspirators with the person who fakes his or her death, that's an interesting situation all by itself, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Because, you know, sometimes it can be the child of someone where they will help stage the death, and then, you know, the child will get implicated in the whole crime and end up doing time alongside the parent. It really just kind of, then, you know, like Anne Darwin, who I mentioned, she kept it from her children that their father was not dead. You know, there's a lot of kind of moral layers to doing this. So, again, I think it kind of comes down to motivation. Why do you want to fake your death? Is there such thing as, you know, an acceptable reason to do this, to fool people in such a serious way?
Let's go to Anna in Glenwood Springs, Colorado now. Welcome to the show. Anna, go ahead.
Yeah, good morning. What an honor it is to be able to talk to you. Actually, I wanted to touch base on a couple of things.
Okay.
I'm just curious to know, you know, I firmly believe that some people disappear because they want to start a new life. But on the flip side of that, I also believe that there's also other factors that play into it. And I'm kind of leaning more towards a paranormal perspective.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, for example, like you made the comment about somebody, you know, being with a partner, walking, you know, hunting or being in the park, and they just disappearing.
And they're gone. They don't know where they are.
I believe that it's connected paranormally. You know, I believe that maybe somehow or another there's something out there that just kind of, in a roundabout way, just kind of swoops them up, you know?
Or they stumble into another dimension or something and can't get back.
Exactly. But the other thing is, too, you know, I come from a family who most of the females talk about suicide on a daily basis. And so, you know, with that perspective, you know, I also believe that sometimes people actually are successful in committing suicide. And with that being said, I think that their mission subconsciously would be to progress to the other side, maybe to come back as an angel and help somebody. I mean, there's always another side to the story as to what happens to them. And ironically, actually, before I called you guys, I'm a night auditor. I work in a hotel.
Mm-hmm.
I just received a phone call from a lady. Believe it or not, I just tuned in to you guys about an hour ago, which is about how long I've been on hold.
Yeah.
I had a lady call me, and she was frantic. I guess her husband had disappeared about 3 days ago, and he had not called them, not emailed them, nothing. And he actually came over here from Denver, and he was never heard from again.
Wow.
And
oh my God.
So, yeah. So, you know, I mean, I see things on a different level. I was born clairvoyant. So I've seen things from both sides.
Mm.
I firmly believe that people disappear for a number of reasons. Maybe they've started a new life. Maybe something paranormally happened to them. Maybe, you know, aliens kind of swooped down and took them away, you know, or they just vanished in the thin air. There may be never an explanation for that. I mean, how do you feel on all that stuff? I mean, do you agree with that? I mean, am I
some of them? No, not at all. Some of them could be paranormal occurrences that we just can't explain. Simple as that. And of course, Elizabeth deals primarily with people who literally fake their own deaths to get away from something. But the situations where people just merely disappear. This is a vast universe, and anything could
mm-hmm.
be happening.
Mm-hmm. Indeed.
But back to these people who are in on it, the wives or the kids. I would guess, as you kind of alluded to, Elizabeth, they break down a little quicker and the person gets caught that way.
Yeah, they will tend to break down a little quicker, especially, you know, like many kinds of crimes, if they cooperate. And, you know, what happened, what Steve told me, in a couple cases he looked at, I just thought this was so funny, that there will sometimes be both a wife and a girlfriend in the situation. And, like, that comes out pretty quickly. So then you can kind of leverage that to get, oh, well, what you don't know is, about Jane down the road, and then forget it. All bets are off.
Let's get a quick call out of Dennis in Pollock Pines, California. Hi, Dennis. Go ahead.
Hi. How you doing today?
Great.
Tonight. I was wondering, George, I love your show. And,
thank
and
you.
Elizabeth, I really not a reader, but I definitely want to read your book now.
Oh, thank you.
But I wanted to touch on the base about Olivia Newton-John's husband.
Oh, yes.
Oh yeah, and you kind of you
story.
Touch on that too, don't you?
Yeah.
Yes, I do write about it in the book.
I'll definitely read it. Now, what? How did he fake his death? And did he go to prison? And
all right, we'll do it. Only has we've got a minute left, so go for that. Go ahead.
Real quickly, so Olivia Newton-John's ex-boyfriend Patrick McDermott. Took the classic stage a water accident route. So he, in 2005, I believe, has recently filed for personal bankruptcy, and he was wanted on some back child support payments. So he chartered a fishing boat down on south of Mexico, and he made it appear that he fell off and drowned. So investigators, you know, because of the troubles he was in, they did not believe this accident. So they set up a website to the effect of findpatrickmcdermott.com, which is kind of like a tip line where you could submit information about of his whereabouts if you've seen him. So they were very closely monitoring web traffic on the site, and they noticed this centralized cluster of IP addresses all in the south of Mexico, all logging onto this site.
There he was,
There he was. He just couldn't stop looking in on himself and seeing what people knew, what they were saying about him. So he really led investigators.
That's how they got him. Elizabeth, thanks for being on the program. Keep in touch with us. Plain Dead is the book. Website's linked up at coasttocoastam.com. For Nathan Staten, Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesour, Stephanie Smith, Chris Boros, and George Knapp, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.